We're learning this week about some of the great debates about printing, publishing Sfarim in the 19th century. It's a sprawling, chaotic, and confusing sugya. Apologize for some of the difficulty. It's very large. There are a great deal of tshuvas. I gave a bunch this week. There are many more other acharonim. So not going to go through it all comprehensively, but I'm just going to try to discuss some of the things we talked about Monday. Just going to try to discuss further some of the issues that came up, some of the svaras for and against the haskamas. And so this is basically a 19th century sugya. They actually debated how far back the haskamas went. The Maharam Bennett, who spent much of his career apparently being opposed to haskamas, claimed that they weren't actually such a long-standing tradition. He said they're just within the last century or so.
You say haskamas, that means haskama, which includes...
Yeah, I'm sorry, I should be more precise, yes. I meant the cherims. As the Maharam Bennett himself points out in our very first tshuva, he says the cherim / haskama has two parts. It has a haskama, which is an endorsement of the work, encouraging people, ratifying its legitimacy, its authoritativeness, encouraging people to buy it. And then there's the cherim part, which was a ban against anyone else infringing on what the publisher did. So Maharam Bennett argued that the cherims were relatively recent, they were only about a century old. Chaim Sofer eventually responds to that, to one of the later tshuvas, and says, no, you know, I found one that's 200 years old, and he starts rattling them off, going back to certainly the early or mid-17th century, which, again, mid-17th century was already about 200 years earlier. So exactly when they started isn't very clear, but it certainly was a fairly venerable tradition by that time, at least a century or two old. But the bulk of the debates, the bulk of the famous, the great debates, occurred in the 19th century. As I mentioned Monday, the two most famous ones were the dispute over the Vilna and the Slavita Shas. I said last time that there aren't that many tshuvas about it that we have. There actually are a few that do deal with it, although there are many more that are not so accessible. And the other one was the Redelheim Machzor, Wolf Heidenheim's Machzor, which some of the tshuvas were about too. So one Matthias point, one point just describing the printing climate, and this, I think, as I mentioned last time, is still probably true today. All the poskim mentioned repeatedly that the most lucrative svarim, the ones with the largest markets, were obviously the ones that were popular and that were bought by everyone. Today we have the Artikel Seder, and back then too, the poskim will all say the most common, the svarim that had the largest markets and were the most successful were Sidurim, Machzorim, and Chumashim. These were svarim that everyone bought. The poskim say expensive svarim, the svarim that had much smaller markets, the ones that were specifically for Bnei Torah, Mefarshei Hash'as, Poskim, many Shulchan Aruchs, the markets were much smaller, and that has various consequences. It was a riskier venture because you wouldn't be able to recoup it that easily, you'd have to really sell copies. B, the market was much larger. There weren't that many people who would buy a Shulchan Aruch within any one country. You really had to sell internationally. So one of the things the poskim debated in these circles was whether the rabbanim based in of one town can impose its will on another town. Chaim Sofer, who argued that they could, was arguing that they have to because the market can't be looked at as fragmented because economies of scale dictate that a printer can't print just 50 copies of something. He has to print several hundred or several thousand, and the market for that per force is international or interstate or whatever it was. And therefore, we have to give the cherim people authority over the rest of the world. Otherwise, the printing will not be viable. Now, one or two remarks about the Redelheim Machzor case. That was a very unusual case, as one or two of you asked me last time. The Redelheim Machzor, what happened was, as I said on Monday, that there had been Machzorim for centuries. Wolf Heidenheim, the great Medakdek, had printed a Machzor that was vastly superior. He was an expert. He was an expert at manuscripts, at translation. He was an expert at tefillah. He printed a vastly superior Machzor, which is still used today, still influences later Machzorim. And after he sold out his first run, he and his partner sold out the first run, other people wanted to print the same Machzor. Why print the old Machzor when you can print a new good Machzor? And his people objected. And the people who had given them cherims, they wanted to object to anyone printing the Machzor. And this is very interesting because many of the other tshuvas, the fights about the shasses and other things, it was stuff, as we keep saying, stuff that was basically in the public domain. The shas was anybody's shas. Mine is nicer, yours is nicer, but they're all basically the shas. The Machzor, it was his own work that he had printed. And virtually everyone in these contexts agree, even the Maharam Bennett, who was the one who fought about haskamas, fought against them often, typically agreed that a new sefer that you produced, he says, then we could issue a cherim. Why should you have the right to freeload off my sefer? It makes a lot of sense. Mikra did or not, I don't know, but certainly it makes sense that we should issue a cherim to protect an author who innovates a new sefer. However, Maran Bennett said that the Machzor doesn't fall into that category. He has a very ingenious, very curious svara. He argues that nobody's going to buy the old Machzor once the new Machzor is available. And again, as we mentioned earlier, the Machzor was by far the most lucrative, among the most lucrative of the svarim. Printers made a lot of their business by selling Sidurim, Machzorim, Chumashim. Machzor apparently was a big deal. So says the Maran Bennett, if you produce a new sefer, fine. So you print it, I won't print it. He says, but here, I was very happy printing Sidurim and printing Machzorim all along. That was great. That was the bread and butter of my business. Now you came along, upgraded the Machzor, and now you want to stop me from printing the new Machzor. Well, I can't sell the old Machzor, so basically you're going to put me out of business from selling Machzorim at all. Because your technology, your innovation makes mine obsolete. And I, now you're telling me I can't sell yours, so I can't sell any Machzor. So you just basically kneecapped my business. So the Maran Bennett held, even though they were going to be pirating his Machzor and selling it, we still shouldn't make a chayer in banning that, because otherwise it would be impossible for the printers to stay in business. That's an interesting svara. So if you can argue that it just doesn't really seem fair that they should be able to benefit from his work. But he felt, since there was no other choice, otherwise he'd basically be shutting down their Machzor business, which was their staple business, that would be too much of a hardship for them, so he felt the chayrim was inappropriate.
Right, didn't we learn a few months ago that Yerwe L'Toch Sdei Chavero, if he has a better merchandise to offer and the other has a less lower quality of the merchandise, the higher quality can in fact offer that, it's not competitive.
Yeah, so
if this guy is a new sitter and the other guy is an old sitter, the old sitter can't taina that you're putting me out of business because you have a new sitter, and therefore I should.
The issue there was if I want to stop you, then you could tell me no, yours is better. Here, you want to stop me. You want to say I can't sell anything.
You can't do that.
You can't. We're not going to give you a chayrim, he says, that you can stop me just because you want to sell your new sitter and stop me from selling any sitter. That you can't do. And so basically, neither side can stop. That's the point. The Maran Bennett held, and then nobody can stop anybody. That it's not fair to either side to drive one or the other out of business. So that's consistent. That we're arguing for freedom in both cases, basically.
What would he say about the argument that's used today for intellectual property? Where's the incentive for people to innovate if people can just think?
So that's a good question. So the Chacham Sofer, who was the main defender in all these tshuvos of the Haskamas, the Charamim, the Chacham Sofer keeps making that point. The Chacham Sofer keeps saying that even historically, he says, the language in the Hacherims always was Shlo Yehi Shluchim Mitzvah Nizakin. And he says, and that doesn't mean the same thing as it sometimes means, like in Bedikas Chametz, they say that you don't have to worry about getting bitten by snakes or whatever because Shluchim Mitzvah Nizakin. Here, just a borrowed term. It means that the Rabbanim didn't want people who did mitzvahs to get hurt, because then people won't do mitzvahs and they won't produce svarim. The Chacham Sofer keeps using the expression lahagdil Torah lahadir. We're not out to give them we're not out for their financial interest. He brings the Gemara actually says, people who are involved in mitzvahs, it says those who are doing it lishma, great. Those who are doing it shalom lishma, we pray that they don't get too successful, because then they'll retire. If they're doing it for mitzvahs, they'll stay in it forever because they want to be mezaka the rabbin. But those who are doing it for ulterior motives, that's fine. It's a mitzvah and we're happy. But we don't want them to get too comfortable, because then they're going to lose their incentive to keep on doing it, since they're only doing it for their parnasa anyway. So you're right. The Chacham Sofer, that throughout his tshuvas, that is his central point, that in order to secure the financial viability of publishing, that's why we issue the chayrims, and that's crucial because we have to make sure the mitzvahs get done. That was his theme. Another point that's debated by all the poskim is what exactly is the authority. What gives the Rabbanim the right to make chayrims, these types of chayrim? So this is a very broad topic that runs throughout halacha, but the poskim, at least the ones I saw, discuss primarily two possible sources of authority they have. One of them is, which the Maran Bennett assumes is the basis for chayrims in various tshuvas, in numerous places the Maran Bennett assumes, and other poskim do too, the basis is, the Gemara says that a guild, a union, a group of people in the same industry have the right to pass regulations on their own industry. The Gemara talks about shechtim, can say that each guy is only allowed to shecht on one day, and if you shecht on someone else's day, you get penalized. Basically, the members of a profession can regulate how their profession is allowed to operate. They have the authority to do that. A government can regulate the whole country, the whole state, and the members of an industry have the right to regulate their own industry. So therefore, the Maran Bennett says, it would follow that the members of the publishing profession have the right to regulate their industry. So assuming that the chayrim regime is in the general interest of everyone, even though in any particular case one printer benefits and everyone else is hurt, But on the whole, next time it'll be your turn. You'll print a sefer and you'll get a cherem. You'll print a sefer and you'll get a cherem. So in general, the protectionist system on the whole is good for the printers, he claims. So therefore, even though if in any one case, not everyone will agree, but on the whole, the system is for the general good of the publishers and they're all on board. So even though we didn't actually ask them to sign on, but it's assumed that they would all agree, so that gives the rabbanim the right to institute these cherems because there's an implicit consent by the publishing industry as a whole. If you assume that, then there are at least two or three major exceptions, major limitations on this. First of all, this taka only applies in areas where there is a presumed consent of all the publishers. So for example, going back to the machzarim, Maram Bennett felt when it comes to machzarim, the printers would not be happy. Regular svarim, we publish 100 new svarim a year, I'll get 10 of them, you'll get 10 of them, you'll get 10 of them, fine. But the machzor, again, the siddur, which was the staple for everyone, if one publisher won and everyone else was restricted, they're all going to go out of business. They're all going to be terribly hurt, and the publishers would not be happy with such a system. They would not say, "Okay, you get the Machzor, and I'll get the Chuas Habach." And the Chuas Habach is an important sefer, but it's not going to sell as many copies as the Machzor is. So that's something that the publishers would not be happy with. And Kol Shekein, the Maharam Bennett says, in a case where the publishers explicitly object to begin with, they explicitly have begun to say, "We don't like the system. We would rather a more chaotic, more capitalist system where everyone is free to do what they want." Then, again, implicit consent is only because it's consent, because we assume they consent. If we know they don't consent, if they start objecting and they don't like the system, we can't impose it on them. So that was one of the central arguments of the Maharam Bennett, why he felt that, in general, the Haskamas would not be appropriate, in the Haram, again, would not be appropriate in his time. This point is made by the Tzemach Tzedek of Schneerson, also felt that insofar as you want to root the Haramim in implicit consent, well, maybe we don't have implicit consent, maybe it doesn't always apply. Another approach, though, which the Tzemach Tzedek develops at length, is that the authority may not necessarily come from the right of the industry to regulate itself. It may come from a more general, more powerful right of Hefker Beis and Hefker, the idea that rabbinic leaders of a community, the community itself, rabbinic leaders of the community, have the right to pass takanas and make rules that affect the whole community, even without the consent of any particular segment of society. That's his conclusion. That's what he feels gives the chachamim the right to pass their cherems. And again, in that there were still heated debates about this. Does that mean I can impose local or bottom can impose their will on neighboring communities? That was debated. That was debated. So, but again, that's another important thing. The two main sources of what gave the Rabbanim the right to impose cherems are either because of the implicit consent of the umnus or because of the power of Hefker Beis and Hefker. Now, one very interesting debate that occurred, this is relevant in the Vilna Slavita argument as well as others, was a common case was, let's say the cherems typically had a expiration date on them, a number of years, 10 years, 15 years, 25 years. Sometimes the publisher who would produce a fixed number of copies would sell out during that period. So do other publishers have the right to begin printing during this man if the publisher has already sold out his run? This was at the heart of the Slavita Vilna dispute too. They had sold out their run, they had possibly several dozen copies left, and there was a settlement made, they would just buy those surplus copies, the ones who wanted to print a new shas. Basically, assuming they were sold out, does that mean the cherem expires? So many, many achronim, probably almost all achronim held yes. They held, first of all, in seichel. What?
Yes.
Yes, I should say no. Perhaps that the cherem is no longer in force, and that it terminates, and that the new publishers may sell during the zman, because the whole point of the cherem was to protect the initial investment of the publishers. There was a great overhead, great initial outlay of the publisher that he had to be guaranteed of recouping. So we had to protect him to sell his entire run, but it wasn't meant to be a lifelong source of income for the publisher, and just because it was popular. It was meant to guarantee him that he'll have an exclusive chance to sell out his entire run. But if he does, fine, then it's over. Some poskim say they probably never meant to asser if he sells out his run. Some poskim say even if they did mean to asser, they have no right to asser after that because it doesn't make sense. It's not fair after that. That's the consensus of almost all poskim except for possibly the Beis Ephraim, who Tshuva I did not see inside. I saw it referred to in secondhand sources. He may have disagreed, but almost everyone else, Chum Sofer, the Teres Chachamim, the Teferes Tzvi, the Ram Bennett, all pretty much held that once you sell out, that's the end of the story, that the cherem is no longer in force. One very interesting discussion, though, is that one of the reasons they give for that, why the cherem is no longer in force, is because they say Since the reason no longer applies, any takana of Chazal, or even of Chazal, certainly of the later authorities, once the reason no longer applies, the takana no longer applies. That, however, is not really true. We have a well-known principle, Davar Shebeminyan, when Chazal passed a rule, even if the reason is batel, the takana remains in force. There are many examples of that. There are also many examples where we don't say that. This is an extremely difficult sugya. Tosfos all over Shas has examples of takanas that he says no longer apply when the reasons don't longer apply. Some of them are quite common. Mayim Achranim. The reason many people don't do it is because Tosfos said we don't have Melech Domus anymore. Mayim Megulim. The Gemara says you leave water out, a snake may have drunk from it, then inserted poison is dangerous. We don't do that. Tosfos said we don't have those kind of snakes. Music on Shabbos, dancing. The Bali Tosfos said that the gzera of dancing, and possibly even music, but certainly dancing, doesn't apply b'zman hazeh, because the reason for the gzera was because you might fix an instrument. We don't know how to do that. I gave a share on this recently. Many poskim challenge Tosfos both because they say the metzias is we do know how to do certain basic tuning. Every player knows how to tune his instrument or adjust the strings or do other types of things, which would be a melacha d'oraisa on Shabbos. Even if they can't do a complete repair, they can do things that would be melacha d'oraisa. But also they ask in Tosfos, what happened to this rule that the gzeirah b'shabbat l'taima lo batla takanta? So the rules and the resolutions for this are quite confusing, and Taras HaKhamim tries to deal with this, tries to explain why in this case we don't apply the rule of gzeirah b'shabbat l'taima lo batla takanta. But in any event, that's one additional question in the poskim debate. Do we say that even if they try to make the cheirim permanently, but as soon as the reason no longer applies because the entire run was sold out, the cheirim perforce is batel? Or do we say no, that the cheirim could be enforced until the end of the zman, even if the reason no longer applies still? We might argue that mistama, they didn't mean to make the cheirim that long, whether they, even if they could, they still might not have meant to do that. But in any event, some posts can relate this to the question of gzeirah b'shabbat l'taima lo batel takanta. One last point, just very briefly, is the question of Dina de Malchusa. Some poskim argued, the Maram Bennett, the Shem Aryeh, argued that because the government specifically in those times used to license printers, they would pay a significant fee, a tax, and they would have the authority to print. Some poskim argued restricting them would be a violation of Dina de Malchusa Dina. Shem Aryeh goes through this very strongly. He says it's like telling someone to do an Isser. The Malach says you have to do it. The Malach says he's allowed to print. So telling him he's not allowed to is like going directly against the Melech. It's like trying to violate the will of the Melech, and it's wrong. Maram Bennett says also we shouldn't be interfering with the Melech. Other poskim say, what interfering? The Melech didn't say you have to print. The Melech said you pay a license fee and you can print. And we can tell you what you print, what you can print, what you can't print. You can't print apikursus, so a lot of things you can't do. You can't print on Shabbos, and just so that's not violating the Melech. That's just telling you. You can. Melech says you can print, and we add restrictions. But other poskim said no, since the Melech was charging money for it, and the value of these licenses would depend on how much freedom they had to print, or for other reasons, and therefore they felt that where the Melech explicitly declares who can print and who can't print, then we should back away. We should allow the Melech's rules to control, and we should not impose additional rules on beyond what the Melech did.